Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. In March, the title of president of Ohio State University was officially conferred on Dr. Michael Drake, but he's been at the helm here for 17 months now. The unpleasant side of the job started right away in June 2014 with the scandal in the ranks of the beloved Ohio State University marching band. Since then, those issues have quieted some. But as head of a university the size and likes of Ohio State and its vaunted athletic program, there's always another challenge or controversy around the corner. Next week, Dr. Drake will issue his annual State of the University address. He joins us today for a preview. Welcome back to the show.
Nice to see you, Ryan.
You served as chancellor of the University of California, Irvine, for 9 years, and that school doesn't even have a football program. So how do you prepare for the malaise on campus and around town after the first loss by the Buckeyes during your tenure?
Well, I'll say when my prior institution was about half our size, you know, just about 30,000 students. Actually, it was quite an active Olympic sports program. Mm-hmm. So there were four national championship volleyball teams while I was there. It was kind of a quite a dynasty there. And we played active basketball, made it to the tournament this year, I know. And so we're in the College World Series with baseball at my prior campus. So there wasn't football, but there was a very active sports program. And I've been a sports fanatic my whole life, a real sports fan. And you know, you win most of them, and that's great. You can't win all of them, so you have to, after a game that doesn't go your way, you got to buckle them up and go back out and make something good happen next week.
So you're a sports fanatic, so it was fun to come to Ohio State then and get in on all the, you know.
Oh, it was one of the big attractions to me, truly. I've been totally connected to Ohio State as a sports fan for 40 years, so I knew what the teams were doing and all those things, and so this was great, a great thrill.
A very positive profile of you was published in the Wall Street Journal last week, and the author noted a certain state of contentment at Ohio State these days, but asked rhetorically in that article whether it was different this time or still an extension of the football team. What's your feel about that now that there's been this loss?
But I said to him that over that, you know, he and I talked for 5 or 6 hours over the course of an evening. It's nice to have him visiting, and what I said was that the university is a very, very large, very, very complex place, and we're doing innumerable things all the time. So our medical center is half of our business, roughly, our enterprise, but there we're making life-saving decisions and surgery and doing research all the time. We have arts and sciences. We have our computer sciences. We have a huge academic enterprise. So things are always happening, and we're always pushing and moving forward. Athletics and sports are a part of it, and that's a big part of our public face. But in the daily work of the president or the faculty or the students, there are all these other things that we're always moving forward with. And so the glow of winning is great, but our daily business is much more complicated and diverse than that.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. My guest is Dr. Michael Drake. He's president of Ohio State University. If you have a question or comment for Dr. Drake, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org or check out our Facebook page and post your question or your comment there. Dr. Drake will be with us the entire hour, but don't wait until the last 10 minutes, please. I read in your official biography that during your tenure at UC Irvine, your efforts led to Irvine being recognized as a national leader in inclusive excellence and sustainability. What did you do there, and can it translate to a place twice as big, the likes of Ohio State?
Well, I think first here at Ohio State, we have an incredibly engaged faculty, an incredibly engaged student body, incredibly engaged community. So I think that anything is possible. So I think that we can continue to do great things in multiple ways. There, the things that we did really, I'll speak of sustainability. What we did was really think carefully about sustainability all day, every day, and made 1,000 small decisions and a couple dozen large decisions that over time allowed the campus to move into what was rated as first place for these last couple of years in its greenness. And so the good lesson for me there was that if you're consistent and forward-thinking and continue to drive toward very large goals, even these battleship-sized universities can move and can continue and can soar. So I think that we've done great things here, and the Ohio State University really has the opportunity to lead the world in many, many ways.
And so what about the inclusiveness issue?
Well, that's something that is an American issue broadly. And universities have this unique position, really, in society, in that we draw students from neighborhoods and high schools and regions of the state and actually around the world to come together and live in our community. And that's a kind of an unusual thing that people from such a wide variety of backgrounds come and not only work together but live together 24/7, 365. And so when we speak of diversity, we really do live diversity on our college campuses today. And we know that the world, you know, neighborhoods tend to be monolithic or high schools or all kinds of other things that people do. When we all come and live together, that produces great energy and great opportunity for learning and growth. It produces also challenges. And so it's something that we have to we face every day and work with every day to try and get better and better at.
There was a demonstration on campus in support of the University of Missouri protest about a lack of minority inclusion and actually a big problem with overt racism there. I've interviewed one student leader here at OSU who helped organize that event, and she said racism is very much a part of life at Ohio State. How do you respond to that?
Well, I think that, you know, the United States, the world in many ways.
But the United States is different than, I mean—
But yeah, don't you mean
the history of racism in the United States is particular?
Well, I think but I would say you can go to different places in the world and find histories of racism and xenophobia of a variety of types throughout antiquity. So I don't mean to make this better or worse. Every you know, it's unique and it's special to us and part of our founding. Some of the founding principles, you know, were affected by this. We just actually saw the play Hamilton a couple of weeks ago in New York, which talked about the founding of the country. And since then, it's been a struggle for the United States. I tell people when I talk about this, virtually any day that you'd pick up a major newspaper, you can find something on the front page that has to deal with friction from people from different races or classes colliding. So it's something that we've always been working on. And I think that the effort is to continue to get more perfect in our ability to work together and to support each other and moving forward. So have we reduced these things to zero? Absolutely not. Are we continuing to try to be more and more sensitive and focused on how we learn to live and work together to be our very best selves? I think that's one of the opportunities that's before us.
Have you experienced racism since moving here?
Golly. So, you know, here's what's true. If you're a person of color in this country, then you experience racism, period, whether or not you even know it. I'm in a little bit of an unusual position because I tend to meet people in relatively protected circumstances. And
they already know who you are.
And I'm there for some purpose. And so, I get treated differently when I'm in this role than if I just walked down the street. And let me say, this is not an unfriendly community broadly or anything like that. So, you know, I'd have to think really carefully about that. But my experience has been over life that there are differences that people who, you know, women are treated differently than men in many circumstances, subtly sometimes, not so subtly. And others, African-Americans, other people of color find that there's special, that there's circumstances in which we're treated differently. And after all of these years, you know, it's hard for me. I'd have to think about it to remember specific incidents recently, but these things happen consistently.
A long time ago, I interviewed
I want to say something.
Yeah,
I'll
sure.
do something.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you something that did happen to me 18 months ago. Just
okay.
Right before I. So after I was named and before I arrived. And after I was named and before I arrived, I had been with my prior university's volleyball team to the White House. The team had been the national champions, and we went to the White House to shake hands with the president and take photographs, which was a great and uplifting day. I flew back across the country and flew to an airport out of town and was being driven home. And the guy who was driving me home was somebody who I knew. That picked me up a lot of times when in my travels related to work. And we were pulled over and treated rudely for what turned out to be no reason. We weren't cited. There was nothing wrong, but the officer was quite demanding and rude, and I thought inappropriate, and led to an internal affairs investigation. But we couldn't figure any reason for being pulled over driving down the road normally, other than the officer had some suspicion of something that, since the driver was African American and was treated in kind of a rude way, and then I was treated in a rude way when I asked the officer why we were being stopped, and which was never answered. You know, it was one of those situations. And actually, as I sat there in all of my chancellorness, you know, but I was doing everything I could to relax and be calm so as not to put my driver in a position of whatever. And so I was just feeling that kind of harassment that we hear about. And things like that have happened to me countless times over the years. But the most recent specific example, now let me say I happen to know the sheriff. So I wrote a letter to the sheriff. I got an apology and a phone call, and there was an investigation, all those kinds of things. So I was treated nicely because I happened to know,
and I knew
the people. But had that not been the case, it just would have been another rude, marginalizing, demoralizing stop, like so many of these that we see that go so wrong.
Yeah, when I was talking about this topic last week on another show, a woman called in and said that she had grown up coping with racism by being extra special nice all the time, and that she found that this really worked and helped get through a lot of tough situations, that she never really felt that she had a problem because she was polite, nice, and immediately, you know, we started talking about that afterwards, and she was delightful, and I really appreciated her call, too. But it's called code switching. It's very stressful.
Yes.
It's been documented as a very, very stressful kind of way to have to live.
Yes. And so I think that that's one of those things when you say, gosh, what's happened, you almost can't. They're coping mechanisms that I would have developed as a child that have, you know, I've been going along all these years, and so you almost don't even notice when you do it. You know, I have an electric, a plug-in electric hybrid, and sometimes it goes from battery to gas, and I hardly know that it switched, you know. So
interesting.
It's a little bit like that, I guess. Maybe that's not the right analogy.
No,
but
I thought that's
okay,
a
fine.
Great analogy.
Okay, let me go back up just to something I want to make sure this to say this. So these kinds of things, and I mentioned this episode that was March of 2014, which is the last one of those that I could kind of think of.
Back in California.
But if I were sitting with friends or relatives or whatever, we could all talk for the next hour about these different things that have happened as far back as we can remember. So when our students are saying, golly, we're feeling these things are happening, some small, some large, some you're not sure what it is, it really is something, though, to have to cope with and learn. As a community, we'd like to try to minimize those episodes. As people, we like to try to make ourselves able to move forward through them, and there's a balance between those things. And so that's part of the serious conversation that's taking place on college campuses now in a variety of ways. And our job my job institutionally is to try to make us as sensitive as possible as we help all the members of our community learn and grow forward.
We will continue our conversation with Dr. Michael Drake, president of Ohio State University. If you have a question or comment for Dr. Drake, give us a call, 614-292-8513. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. My guest is Ohio State University President Dr. Michael Drake. We're done talking about football, I guess, but if you have another question or comment, give us a call at 614-292-8513. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can check out our Facebook page. You can tweet us at WOSU All Sides. Thanks again for joining us, Dr. Drake.
Good to be here.
Just in part, kind of to conclude our conversation, and it may continue if we have more callers or emailers that want to talk about it. But in an official statement regarding the events at the University of Missouri, you said that those events reinforce the role that universities play in confronting issues of racism and intolerance in American society. Yes. What about parents who say, I didn't send my kid to OSU to demonstrate at the Union?
That would be a conversation you'd have to have with them. You know, we have our students come to campus, as I mentioned, from a wide variety of backgrounds. It's something that we really appreciate. They come from all over Ohio, all over the country, and many places from around the world. And that leads to a great richness of experience and opinion here. And having done this now for many years, I've been in higher education one way or another for my whole life, you know, and watching young people come and become more self-aware and develop opinions on things and then find a place which they can share those opinions and refine them as a part of the maturational process. So we think of the university as having function that's beyond what happens in the classroom. We think of academic excellence, research excellence, things that happen in the on that side of the house, but also character and leadership excellence that you really develop by working with people and growing. And so it's a part of the university experience. And, you know, we try to make this a safe and nurturing place for that to happen.
Once again, my guest is Ohio State University President Michael Drake, 614-292-8513, or email us from at allsides@wosu.org. Here's a quick switch for you. Okay. An email from Cody.
Hi, Cody.
Writes, congratulations on your recent appointment to the Board of Directors of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Yes. What is your guitar styling and who are some of your musical influences?
Well, I grew up, my mother was a frustrated singer. Which wasn't that frustrated. She was an English teacher and social worker, but she also loved singing. And in fact, my father was a football player in college, was the captain of the football team, and his team was national champions. I have his national championship trophy in my office, and I can't tell you how thrilled and proud I was to be able to put a signed ball from the current national champion team there. So to have two 80 years apart was just a dream come true. But speaking of those days, so my mother sang. My father actually was a big tough football lineman. He joined the Glee Club, though, because he thought it would make my mother think he was more sensitive. And it worked out. They were married for 70 years, so it worked out well. He had a strategic plan, I guess. But so I grew up in a house where music was something that was important and we all liked. I was more of a listener than a player, but I also lived a mile or two from a place called Tower Records. Huh. And in fact, the founding of Tower Records was about a mile and a half from where I grew up and near my high school. So in college and then at the very beginning of medical school during vacations, I worked at Tower Records and I listened to music all the time when I worked there. And I played guitar as a hobby, but I listened to really all kinds of music. So I'd say that, you know, I really like almost all of it. And I could say, do you hear some people who I've liked listening to a lot? But then I would walk out thinking, gosh, I should have said someone else. So yeah. The people who I liked listening to a lot, you know, for guitar players back in those days, when Pritkin was in college, I was in the Bay Area, so the San Francisco music scene was very hot. And guitarists like Jimi Hendrix and Eric Clapton were very well known. I saw them both perform live several times, and I really enjoyed them. I also enjoyed Wes Montgomery, who played a different style of guitar. So there were, you know, many, many guitar players there. But I was a real fan of Miles Davis, you know, and like that. I liked a group called Weather Report that had lots of different people. You know, I have thousands of songs on my iPad, and I usually play it on random because I like them all. But of the people I saw perform live in the kind of rock and roll era, I would say that Eric Clapton and Jimi Hendrix were the two that really were the Eric Clapton for his technical ability and Jimi Hendrix for his stage presence were the two that were most memorable.
Not too shabby.
Well, they were pretty good at it, I think.
All right. Thanks a lot for that email, Cody. Once again, our email address is allsides@wosu.org. And you're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. My guest is OSU President Michael Drake. Charles in Johnstown, you're on the air. Hi, Charles.
Good morning. I'm sure I'm not in the minority to be very happy that you're here, Dr. Drake.
Thank you very much.
What I wanted to discuss, I'm a 61 and 74 graduate of OSU.
Go Bucks.
And yes. And one of the things I wanted to discuss is how we translate all of the largesse that we get from our football and basketball programs into something that will be more helpful to lower and middle class economically folks who need help. And of course, it's not just us, it's the whole country. But I see this as an opportunity to continue to get better at those things.
Yes. Well, I appreciate that very much. And so there are a couple of things that happened. You know, we see, and I mentioned this to the Wall Street Journal reporter as well, we see the football team and the men's basketball team a lot. But we have about 900 other student-athletes on campus, and so we support the most robust student-athletics program, collegiate athletics program in the NC2A. And so one thing that happens with the success of our more marquee programs is they create opportunities for hundreds and hundreds of other students to have scholarships to be able to come to school and to compete at a nationally competitive level in things as diverse as fencing and synchronized swimming and track and field and other things that are so the athletics program really is a broad program that reaches throughout our campus and has about 1,000 kids participating and is really a wonderful program. The graduation rate overall for our athletes is higher than the graduation rate for our non-athletes. We have wonderful successes for men and women in the athletic program is one thing there. Another thing the athletics program does is that it supports financially quite robustly programs in our libraries and other things on campus that actually help to make the quality of the campus academically better for all of our students. And so that's a really important part of what we do. We have a benefit at Ohio State of having an athletics program that actually turns revenues. Most athletic programs don't. And we use those revenues. Some support athletics, but some support the general campus in really good ways. And in addition to that, you know, it's really nice to have the athletics program as something that helps draw us all together and brings 100,000 Buckeye fans to us every weekend and allows us to really feel like a community. And, you know, we're going to get back to our winning ways this weekend, I know, but it's great to have us all come together and be part of the same community. So that's really, really important to us.
Thank you, Charles, from Johnstown, for that question. Ohio State's been on the rise academically since the late 1980s. That Wall Street article mentioned how some OSU administrators now openly speak about wanting it to be a top 10 public university. But there have been consequences to that. The gap between the haves and the have-nots is bigger than ever on campus. There's not as much diversity as there used to be when it comes to income. And how do you I know that that's a big part. It's one of the legs of your three-legged stool in terms of your approach to as the head of administration at Ohio State University. But that's a hard one to overcome. It's harder. The GPA has to be higher. The SAT scores have to be higher. Well, those are often associated with wealthier students.
So we are a part. This is Tuesday, Wednesday. It's Tuesday. Mm-hmm. So last Monday, I was at a meeting in Indianapolis with a group, I'm on the board of a group called the University Innovation Alliance. And that group is 11 public universities, large public universities like us, looking very actively at things that we can do to help degree attainment and degree completion be something that's available to Americans regardless of their income bracket. We know that higher education, not just at Ohio State, but higher education in the U.S., particularly of successful higher education institutions, those that have graduation rates of 70% or higher, the income distribution in the student body does not reflect the income distribution in the country. About 85% of the students come from the upper half of the income distribution. And one of the things that we think is most important is to do everything we can to make opportunities for bright, motivated young people, regardless of their parental income, to be able to get an education. So we're working really, really actively on doing everything we can to support access and excellence across the income band. And the University Innovation Alliance is one of the ways to do that. And it's very important for us. We also look very actively at our partnerships with other institutions, our regional campuses and the community colleges, where it's not quite as expensive to attend early on. And so that's another opportunity that's very important to us. And we have very active relationships with those institutions because we think that's an important part of our mission.
You also have pledged, as far as actual cash money to students, you're working very hard on that issue as well to lower the debt when they get out.
What we did this last year was we found $15 million to put into need-based aid for lower and middle-income students. So it affects the vast majority of Ohio students who are Ohio residents who are on campus with family incomes of under about $97,000. We were able to give grants to 12,000 students to try to help decrease the debt burden.
And they're not academically based?
These are based on need, and they're not we have merit-based, you know, scholarships in other ways, but this is $15 million in need-based aid because I'm very concerned about the level of debt that students have and have been. And so we want to make sure, working with the legislature and broadly across the campus, that we do everything we can to help students afford a higher education.
You've put access, affordability, and excellence at the top of your 2020 vision list for OSU. How do you strike the right balance when excellence is so much a function of those SAT scores, which tend to be so much a function of relative wealth? Is it, can you continue to find $15? I mean, $15
million.
I can find $15 in my coat pocket, I hope. But can you keep finding money to shoot at that, seeking that balance?
Yeah, so I mean, access is one thing, affordability is another, and excellence is a third. And we don't want access or affordability at the expense of excellence. So we have to continually push ourselves on excellence. That, in many ways, that's supporting the faculty and working with the faculty to facilitate and help them to continue to move forward with discovery and better methods of teaching and all of those things that they are so passionately committed to and do such a good job at. But we want to continue to get better. So we're working on supporting the faculty, which requires resources. So the way that we're looking at affordability and access is to try to make sure that we're being as efficient as possible in the way that we invest the resources that we have. And so we were able to find the money to move into need-based aid by administrative efficiencies. And that's we have a continual daily quest for being more efficient and being better. And there's always a tension. These always are tuned things, but we think of them always in concert.
A growing efficiency across the nation's campuses is the use of adjunct faculty. That they're cheaper. They're cheaper by the hour. They don't require benefits. But it's becoming a big issue for a lot of people. They're concerned about not just the quality of the education, but whether or not there's that kind of security and safety for the faculty.
So two things there, I guess. One is that when we think about teaching and faculty, that part, what we're really thinking about a lot is the quality of teaching and the efficiency of teaching and just being the best teachers we can be. Part of what the University Innovation Alliance is looking at broadly and part of what we're doing with the University Innovation Alliance is saying, gosh, can we continually reexamine our teaching to help us be better and better and better? And I make a real point of saying our teaching already is rated as excellent. Our students do incredibly well. They love it. The connectivity of students to the faculty and of alumni to the Ohio State University are enviable all over the country. But I always believe when we're really, really outstanding, we want to just get a little bit better. And so we're looking at doing the best we can with our teaching and teaching outcomes, and that's a big thrust. As we look at that, part of looking at it is also to look at the demands that are on the faculty and the different categories of faculty that we have and trying to be appropriate in supporting those faculty who might spend more of their time in research or more of their time teaching and looking at that balance to make sure it's appropriate. And then I think within that, security for teaching faculty is something that's a very important thing for us to keep on the table and be very sensitive to.
The Board of Trustees last summer voted to freeze costs for in-state undergraduates. That is all costs.
Yes.
How long can that go on?
Well, it can't go on forever. It's a little bit like being undefeated, I guess, in football. You know, we like it, and we do everything we can to keep things that way. We know, though, that, you know, that there are cost pressures on us from a variety of places. We had a 2% increase in wages, and we have 27,000 employees, and so that's real money. We had an increase in faculty salaries. Those things are real money. Other costs go up, and so we have to do things for building, maintenance, and et cetera, et cetera. So just to say that we have cost pressures at one side, so at the beginning, we're able to do two things this last year. One is to look for efficiencies, and that helped us a lot, and we were able to find efficiencies. And the other is to work with the legislature to make sure that higher education is supported adequately in Ohio.
Well, of course, it's a shadow of its former self in Ohio as far as support for education in the legislature. What do you say to them, and what kind of feedback are you getting from them?
I said to them last year that the future of Ohio really depends on the quality of higher education in Ohio. That's the future of the country relies on that. And they understood that well. And I said, you know, we'll do our part by being as efficient as we can and we'll hold these costs, at least for the time being, that we can hold flat. We'll hold those flat. But we'll need to have support from the state if we're going to continue to push forward on quality. And actually, we had the largest SSI, the state share of instruction, increase in a decade. So let me say they came through quite nicely. We had a good partnership. We were efficient here on the campus, and the legislature coming through with helping to begin at least the process of reinvesting in higher education. And for that, they should be applauded. And that's to the Speaker and the Senate President and the Governor and the President Pro Tem. All were great supporters of us and of ours, and we appreciate that.
Mark in Columbus, you're on the air with OSU President Michael Drake. Hi, Mark.
Hi, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Mark.
I got my PhD at Ohio State in the 1990s, but I have to say I would be somewhat concerned about being a graduate teaching assistant or a junior faculty at Ohio State or many college campuses today in light of all the unrest going on, in which many graduate students, faculty, and other students have been attacked for essentially exercising their freedom of speech. And I feel a lot like liberals must have felt in the late 1960s when confronted with some of the extremism of the new left, where just things seem to be getting more and more out of control and over the top. And so my question is, what measures have you taken or what measures are you going to take to protect your graduate students, undergrads, and faculty from accusations of racism? When people make are teaching in their classes, and other similar attempts to stifle their freedom of speech.
Well,
thank you, Mark.
Yes, thanks. So you know, but I certainly have had opportunities now in my 11th year as a university chancellor or president to deal with issues of protected speech from a variety of sides of these issues. And I believe very much in protected speech and believe that we are a marketplace of ideas, and we do everything we can to be a safe place for people to express their ideas. And we've worked really, really hard on that, and I've worked really, really hard on that for years. Most of the circumstances that come up, the overwhelming majority of things that come up, don't make it to the press. But it's something that we think about on a daily basis, academic freedom and protected speech generally. And so we do what we can to protect the speech of every individual all the time within the bounds of those things that are appropriate. And, you know, given the 100,000 people that we have on campus on a given day, our students, our faculty, and our staff, and the variety of opinions that they express, it works awfully nicely. Certain times there are people who have strongly different points of view, but from the standpoint of the central leadership and administration, we do everything we can to protect those people who have speech that is protected by a statute and principle in the country. Actually, it works pretty well for us, and we're going to continue to do that.
Okay. Mark, thanks for the call. Appreciate your time. My guest is Ohio State University President Michael Drake. If you have a question or comment, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513. We'll also take your emails at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. My guest this hour, OSU President Dr. Michael Drake. We've talked about football, racism, the cost of a decent college degree these days. Questions, comments, give us a call.
Yeah, normal, easy things to make, you know.
Just the easy everyday conversations.
Easy everyday things.
Yeah. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Email from Indira. who writes, do you think that teachers are doing a good job in preparing high school students for college? Lots of students are taking remedial classes, and they are students of color that attended public high schools. Do you think that colleges need to change the way they teach and train teachers in their education program? All on the teachers here, but
yes.
What are your thoughts about that in general?
So a couple of things. One is we have College of Education, which we're very proud of and connected to. I'm a professor of education as well as ophthalmology, and we think a lot about our role with the educational system from PK through 12. So we have programs that are with moms before the babies are born all the way up through the end of high school, doing what we can to work with that system to try to help it be better. We know that the pre-college education system has challenges, and so we're all working to try to make it better. It's a very complicated system. We'd like it to be better, and we're continually working to try to make it better. Here at the university, we're also then, as I mentioned earlier, doing what we can to try to look at our teaching and continually improve it, because we would like to make it that you are not having a high school preparation that may not be perfect isn't something that limits your ability to be able to excel here. And so we want to just make sure we're as sensitive as possible to the students as they arrive on campus and that we provide the best possible pathway for them forward. But it's, again, it's an ongoing, ever-changing challenge for us and something that keeps us quite engaged.
Makara in Columbus, I think your question fits in here. Welcome to the show, Makara.
Yeah. Hi, Dr. Drake.
Hello, Makara.
Hi, Ann. Yeah.
Hi.
So I think you kind of touched this in and out a little bit through the session. But my question, I went to Ohio State, and I vividly remember, during my time there, I did computer engineering,
yes.
Science. And during my time, really, like, we were probably maybe around four students, that minority on that program. And I'm African, African, Black African, but in the sense that,
yes.
it's just my question. It is, how do you envision this, or how do you plan it in the next future? The university, how is it going to do to promote more minority? And when I mean minority, I mean also women too, because there is,
yes.
really we have a lack of women on these programs. So how the university partner with the city, especially here in Columbus, or around the country with other state, with other university and nonprofit to get this really take off? I know there's a great news on Ohio State, how our numbers for undergraduate is about, I think I'm quoting this from the news I'm looking,
yes.
about 72%. Yeah, that's really lucrative news for academic, but you know, how do we do that as university,
yes.
to okay. get minority on those STEM programs, really? Yeah.
Great. Thanks, Makara.
So I'll say again that one of the things that's very important to us, and we mentioned it in our speech last spring, and we think about it all the time, is what we can do to make sure that we can be as inclusive as possible and making sure that bright students from all across the state have access to the highest quality higher education. And it's, for me, it's something actually that's been a central part of my career for 40 years and more than that, 40 years for sure. And we have a variety of programs that we've worked on in the past that have been very successful at doing that. I did those mostly at, you know, different times in the 70s and 80s and 90s and 2000s. And so we're doing what we can to incorporate those programs here at Ohio State. What they generally mean is, first, having very high standards, and two, working in a very engaged way with students from a wide variety of backgrounds to help them to be as successful as possible, helping the institution to be nurturing and helping the students to have the skills to be successful. And then it has to be important to us. So we have to say it and think it and practice it daily. It takes years to make much difference, but we've been able to see over the past years that bit by bit things can turn in ways that then are sustained. And it would take longer than we have now to kind of talk about what some of those are, but we are looking forward to being a more inclusive and excellent campus every year as we move forward, and I appreciate your support on that.
Thanks, Makara, for the call. Appreciate it. David in Delaware, you're on the air. Hi, David.
Hi. Hi, Dr. Drake.
Hello, David.
First of all, I applaud you for striving for excellence at the school. I know you're right now you're the most competitive state school in the state. Okay, that said, what do major sports athletes have different admissions criteria, different academic criteria for admission? And I guess my question is probably not just Ohio State, but the Division I programs overall.
Yes, so a couple of answers to that. One answer is that broadly, if we look at our NC2A athletes, and include all 1,000 of them, their graduation rates are higher than the general population. If we look at, you were speaking more of football and men's basketball.
And getting into school here.
Right. And so let me just say that athletes and musicians and other people who have special talents, when there are a wide variety of special talents that people can bring, the university looks at those things when the admissions process is going on. So there is an ability to say, here are my grades, and they meet the criteria, and here's some other things that are special about me. And so we have a broad range of things that allow you to be special and to contribute in a way that makes a difference to us. Ability in athletics at all, every university in the country is something that's looked at as a positive thing. If you go to an Ivy League where they don't have scholarships, they still look at people who are going to be able to compete athletically and see that as a positive thing. Again, that would also be for a ballet dancer or an opera singer or lots of other things that contribute. So those things are taken into effect. That being said, we have very specific requirements, and these continue to move up on the performance you have to have before you admit. In fact, the NC2A, starting in 2016, has a new minimum level that everyone in Division I has to have before a student can be admitted.
What is that?
It's a 2.3 GPA, and moving up from a 2.0. And then there are minimum SAT and ACT scores that one needs, and then you have to make progress toward your degree in a real way. So we're all working to look at that. It has been, though, an issue, and you're of course right to say, I don't mean to move away from this. That's been an issue in higher education for a long time, and we're pretty proud of our program here, but we know that it's something we continually work on.
Okay. David, thanks a lot for your call. When you hear someone like Ezekiel Elliott say he's going to go to the NFL, he's going to have that go pro next year, what do you think?
Well, first, I like Zeke. You know, I've had a chance to meet Zeke and his parents, and his parents are very proud of him. He's although he's a big, tough guy on the field, mm-hmm. he's very, in my interactions, like polite and gentle. So I really like him a lot.
Yeah,
and real nice, a fine young man, as are so many of our players. I mean, it's just really nice to get to know them and be proud of them. Zeke is unusual. He's in a tiny fraction of the most gifted players, and they then have a chance to go on. The overwhelming majority of even our football players don't have careers in professional
right.
sports, and so they're really here for the education. And I liked actually Cardale, who started out at the beginning saying he was really
yeah.
focused on football. After a couple
he
years,
learned.
but let me say he learned. And isn't it a great thing that you can come focused
yeah.
For one reason and say, boy, this college education thing, this is pretty good. And let me roll that back 80 years, if I may, and say that my father, I know, went to college to play football, not to do both. Football didn't help him go to college. It was that he didn't want to go to college. He just wanted to play football, and you had to go to college to be able to play football.
Yeah.
So he said, fine, I'll go to college because that's where I can play football. When he was in college, he learned about college, met my mother, ended up going to medical school and practicing medicine until he was in his 90s. So the academic part of this is really the overwhelmingly most important part for the vast majority of our students. Some have a chance to have professional careers, and we wish them the best. But we have a program, and Zeke will know this if he chooses to go pro, that lets you come back and finish your degree if you leave and go off to the pros or something else. And so we're really focused on degree, and it'll be a proud day when we hand him a degree, as I did to Braxton Miller last December.
Which is becoming more and more common. They finish up. They just don't do it right away.
Looking forward to it, yeah.
Dan in Columbus, you're on the air, I think. Hi, Dan in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Dan.
Yeah, hi, Anne.
Kind of along the same lines we were talking about.
Hi, Dan.
Yes, hi, yes. I'm actually calling to find out what provisions are made for adults, working adults, to complete their degree.
Yes.
I guess the traditional mode.
Yes. So there are a variety of programs we have, extension and others that we have that allow people to come back and learn things. And the our student body, the fully admitted, full-time students, it's much more diverse than it used to be in terms of age as well. And in fact, most college students in the country today are not the prototypical 18 to 22-year-olds who come and finish in 4 years. So there are a variety of I don't mean to call people in their 20s and 30s older adults, but a variety of people who are not in the what we would have thought of as the traditional mold who are in college today. We have veterans on campus. In fact, I was proud that we were rated the number one college campus in the country for support of veterans just a week and a half ago, and really proud of our veterans programs. But our veterans are a bit older and have come back. And as I mentioned, our student athletes sometimes come back. We have other people who come back at a variety of times, and it's something we're really pleased and proud about.
There's been an increase in interest in online courses.
Yes.
Is that part of the paradigm?
Yes. So that's, again, time doesn't allow us to say everything, but part of the paradigm is or be online courses and distance learning courses. We have full online degrees that are available, as do many other colleges as well. And so there are a lot of people involved in higher education today. That most people involved in higher education today, most students in higher education, are not the 18 to 22-year-olds that we would have thought as typical back in the day. And we're very proud of that. It's a very, very good thing.
Sexual assaults on college campuses, not a new phenomena. Last week, there was a sexual assault along the perimeter of the OSU campus. Yeah. This fall, you announced a comprehensive plan to combat these issues. You also noted that OSU is among 27 universities participating in the Association of American Universities Campus Climate Survey on sexual assault. What have you learned from that?
Well, the survey, we're very pleased to participate in the survey, and I had a chance to discuss this with my colleagues. We all recognize that this is a very serious problem on college campuses, and there are a variety of reasons for that. The survey allowed us to really shine light into places that hadn't been talked about and to really raise the level of conversation into this, again, this very serious issue. And what we found from the survey is that the problems are relatively similar across the board. And then we were able to share best practices to see what we can do to make the campuses as safe as possible, and to provide the most robust support services for women and men who are victims or survivors of sexual assault. We want to reduce the number to as close to zero as possible, and want to make the resources available to those who are survivors or victims the best they can be. And so we're continually trying to move forward. Buckeyes Act is our new program to try to pull together the existing programs on campus and add a few more. But it's a continual issue for us to push down.
Also on the topic of security, we just have a couple minutes left. Yes. New measures went into effect last Saturday to ban backpacks, among other things, at the SHU.
Yes.
A Cleveland.com story said that the new measures will likely be a permanent move. Why?
Oh, I think this is the unfortunate state of the world, as we find that security is we have to continue to push forward on security because of the threats that we see. And I think that this was a discussion that had been going on. We have very elaborate security at our games, really. And in the aftermath of the tragedy in Paris, we were saying, gosh, we just have to continue to be ever vigilant. Our security now will be more similar to what's been in place for many, many years now at NFL games and others, where we're trying to do everything we can to make sure that this wonderful fan experience is one that we can do everything we can to guarantee that that's a safe experience. We feel good about what we're doing and what we've done and the security at the SHU, but, it's something where we have to continually move forward in this challenging world that we live in.
President Drake, thank you so much for joining us today.
Let me say how much I enjoy talking with you and how quickly the time passes. I look forward to coming back.
Thanks a lot. That's OSU President Dr. Michael Drake. Thanks for all your great questions and comments today. And thanks for listening. Thanks to the All Sides staff, producer Michael DeBonis, associate producer Amy Jurevich, assistant producer Shyla Knott, the All Sides interns, Trent Lammers, Ryan McFadden, and Sydney Schaefer, OSU students all, with video production by Rich Karsmitsky and Amber Karsmitsky. Alan DeCenzo is the composer of our theme music. Have a very, very happy holiday, and thanks again for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.